You're listening to episode 346 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Building Psych Strength podcast. I'm Dr. April, and I'm excited that you're here. I want you to think about where you're at this point in the year. So we're, a handful of months into the year. And it's funny because at the beginning of the year, we come in all motivated and excited. We're going to change the world, and things have usually fizzled long before we've gotten to this point. And that's one of the interesting reasons why I wanted to cover today's topic, which is about goal setting and motivation and self-control. It's fun because, you know, I'm a person who likes to read a lot. Like I buy a lot of new books. I usually am reading two or three books at a time, and I chow through them really quickly. And so I'm always on the prowl for the next book that I think looks interesting. So while I was digging around on Amazon a few weeks back, I came across this book on goal setting and motivation. And I'm like, this is really interesting. I'm really excited to get this book. So I ordered the book, I read the book, and I just knew that I had to get the author onto the podcast, or at least try. And you never know. I mean, if I reach out to somebody and invite them on, you never know if they have time or if they are just such a giant name that, like, hey, it doesn't matter how many times I ask Oprah or Brene Brown to be on this podcast, they're probably not coming. Yet. But you never know if somebody's going to accept your invitation. So this week's guest, Ayelet Fischbach, is one of those people who I reached out to because I loved her book. I thought it was so useful and such a great synthesis of a body of work that impacts people all the time. Reached out to her, invited her, and now here she is. So this week is a really exciting one because it came from just a genuine interest that I had in the topic, and I just knew that this audience would really benefit from hearing from Ayelet. To give you a little bit of background on her, Ayelet Fischbach is the Jeffrey Breckenridge Keller Professor of Behavioral Science and Marketing at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. And she is the author, this is the book I bought, of the book Get It Done, Surprising Lessons from the Science of Motivation. P.S. The cover of this book is really creative. So I'm not going to spoil it, but go search for it. It is such a cute play on just words, the way that she set the cover up. So consider that just a little bit of a tease to go look for the book. Ayelet is the past president of the Society for the Study of Motivation and the International Social Cognition Network. She is an expert on motivation and decision making, and her groundbreaking research on human motivation has won the Society of Experimental Social Psychology's Best Dissertation Award and Career Trajectory Award and the Fulbright Educational Foundation Award. That is not easy to get. So congrats to her and congrats to us for getting to have this conversation with her. It was such a great conversation. We talked about so many things that are just like tangible in our lives and ways that we can make it more likely that we will achieve our goals. We talked about, is it better to set a goal where you are avoiding something or setting a goal where you are trying to do something new? Super interesting stuff there. She talked about exactly how important it is to have social support and exactly how detrimental it can be if we have people who don't support our goals. She talked about self-control and what self-control actually means and motivation and how they interrelate. It was such a valuable conversation. So I'm absolutely excited for you guys to hear about this, especially if you are a person who likes to achieve and has a lot of things you want to accomplish in your life. This episode is for you. All right, let's dive in. Ayelet, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. I came across your book on Amazon as I was looking for the next thing that I wanted to read, and it really caught my eye as something that I know that this audience would be really excited to hear about. So I appreciate you accepting this invitation and coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you, April. I am so excited to be here today.
This is amazing. So I kind of want to start a little bit on the personal side, because it's always interesting when people, you know, decide to write books. If I think about who this audience is, we have an audience of people who, there's a lot of ways I would describe them. People of high responsibility. They tend to be people who are juggling a lot of different things in a lot of different domains of life. Also, people who tend to be pretty high achieving. And part of what comes with that is naturally just wanting to set goals, wanting to achieve those goals. So when you think about, you know, yourself being somebody who is very high achieving, has had such, you know, research and academic success, what was it that made you get into this field and ultimately write this book?
So there were a few reasons. I think that the main one was that I've been doing motivation science forever. And in my career, I've seen that the field just growing exponentially. So that, you know, I used to be able to like just list all the main characters in that motivation science and what each one of them found very easily. It became impossible. There is so much work. There are so many interventions. There is so much amazing research, and it felt like a very messy room. And I thought, okay, I will start by organizing things for myself. As I was doing this organization, I discovered that you can actually see a pattern. You can see a framework, like these interventions fall into four specific buckets. And so as I'm writing and I'm rediscovering things and I discover other things, I see this order emerges from the findings. And at that point, I'm writing to my daughter, okay, no longer to myself, I'm writing to, excuse me. At this point, I'm writing to my daughter, no longer to myself. She was starting med school. She's commenting on this. It's like this mother-daughter project of me putting order in the science of motivation. And fast forward a couple of years, there was a book.
I love that. I love that it turned out to, or started as something that you were putting together for, well, I mean, yourself, but then it became the same with your daughter. That's really neat. And a neat gift to the world that, you know, this contribution was something that you guys could work on together in the beginning.
Yeah, it was really, you know, she needed to be motivated. Like she was in med school, but it's really like what convinced me that it should be a book was discovering that it's not just a collection of interventions. There is an order. There is something to understand from just taking like this broad view of motivation science and of looking at what we discovered as a field. So this is the message that I wanted to convey to a readership that is hopefully more than my daughter.
Amazing. Well, okay, so this area of goals and motivation, it's one where we cover a lot of things that fall into this domain on the podcast, where there's what the science tells us, and then there's what you'll find out there on social media and that just gets pushed out in other domains. So there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of conflicting messages that we hear. We hear about things like SMART goals or set a stretch goal or no, you need to make it really tiny, not too big. And it all feels completely conflicting depending upon who you hear from. And so from your perspective, having done such a broad review of the work and having contributed so much to the work, how do we set goals? Like, how are we supposed to do it? What's the right way?
So yes, there are many misconceptions. There are many conflicting strategies. And another issue is that there are many what we refer to as moderators. Like what works for some people in some situations doesn't work for other people in other situations. So you kind of need to understand how to do this. And you know, I sometimes use the metaphor of cooking, which makes everybody in my life they make fun of me because I'm not a good cook. But it's like understanding how to motivate yourself, how to motivate others is like cooking, in the sense that there are many ingredients, and if you just look at the ingredients out there, you see, you can say like, well, how do I even start? But then once you understand the principles, and like in particular, I talk about like four areas. Okay, you understand that you need to set the goals in the right way. You need to monitor progress. You need to like get yourself from one point to another in like some ways. You need to juggle multiple goals, and you need to leverage social support. Once you understand that there are these four components, you can do the analysis of what's missing from your own recipe. Okay? Why might not work for you the way you want them to work, and kind of address specifically the thing that is missing, so that you don't add the wrong spice, okay, or the wrong ingredient, or something that you already have in your recipe. Like you might already set the right goal, but environment, the people around you are not supportive, and we know that social support is absolutely critical. And so you need to find people who are supportive. Okay, maybe you have supporting environment, but you have too many goals on your plate and they contradict each other. You might need to reprioritize and find the right balance. You need to juggle your goals in a different way. And so, like, understanding what is possible and what might be missing is often the way to start. You mentioned SMART goals. This refers to the acronym of setting targets on goals that are specific, measurable, achievable.
Realistic, relevant, and time bound.
Time bound. That's the T by the end of SMART. And these are good principles for setting a target, but you know, there are other principles for setting a target, and then maybe your problem is not with setting a target. Okay? Maybe your problem is with setting a goal in the first place.
What's the difference between a goal and a target?
And so the goal is more general. Okay? The goal can be to be healthy, to start exercising, to start some academic pursuit, be a good professional. The target is usually a number. Okay, it is how much and how soon. Okay, so you might want to do well at work, and your target is to finish a specific project by the end of the month. Okay? And it's really like it has a number. Okay, you might be building a new house, and the target is to order the kitchen by a certain date, or you know, how much money you're willing to spend on that kitchen, and it's a specific target. These targets matter a lot, by the way. They are motivating. So,
I'm curious on the two sides. So you've got the goal, which feels larger, maybe a little less specific and concrete, and then these targets that are much more concrete. It feels like there are elements of, you know, you've got this balance, right? This notion of something that's sort of bigger and loftier, and then these more tangible targets. It feels like there are elements of both of those that would help us stay focused. Like there's a yin and a yang there that would help us keep moving in the direction that we want to go. Can you talk a little bit about what is it about these big goals? Because you mentioned this in your book, like these things about these big goals and why having like something that is more or less specific is motivating versus something that's a target that we can point at and check off when, you know, we've reached it.
Yes. The big goals, okay, the goals are often best when they are intrinsically motivating, when they are something that you want to approach, okay, and not avoid, when it's something that is seen as a goal and not as a chore. They are exciting, okay? Like you can see yourself getting there, and you're excited about that. That's the person that you want to be. So when we talk about setting a goal, we we think about a goal that is not immediate, that is enticing, that is not a chore, that is exciting. A lot of the work on like approach and avoidance goals showing that like approach goals are often better because you're not trying to avoid the person you are. You are trying to be the person that you want to be. A target is one strategy to reach these goals. If I set my goal as being a healthier person, one potential target would be to exercise 4 times a week. Okay. And now I can measure it. And the nice thing about targets is that we can measure them. And then we see anything that is below the target as a loss. Okay. And so we are really highly motivated to reach it. And if you, April, if you ever had like a step count goal and you find yourself at night walking around your bedroom, okay, that this is the effect of targets, right? Like yeah. I have only 100 steps from this goal. I caught my son one day just waving his hand in air. He was trying to meet his step goal. He's 10. Okay. That, and it's nice because the target is motivating. Like he cares about doing that. And we all often care about meeting the number. Of course, we should also have a healthy relationship with these numbers because they are only there to motivate us. If it doesn't work, then that's fine. Okay, we can start again next week or tomorrow.
Yeah, I love this. It this interesting nuance underneath this that I'm hearing you say is that this goal, you know, you talked about intrinsically, I'm going to go with, you know, maybe the reason why you might have that step count. Maybe you have this goal, this approach goal of wanting to be a healthy person or be a fit person, that can feel emotional. I mean, you can feel, it can feel very aspirational and exciting to you. Getting 10,000 steps in isn't necessarily as like there isn't as much of an emotional pull there, but it does feel good to check that box. So it feels like you're almost relying on two different types of, I don't know, excitement and motivation to keep you going. It's like this big lofty one. And then, you know, something that feels really nice to accomplish that will make you wave your hand in the air in order to be able to do it and say that you made it.
Exactly. There was a really cool paper that looked at the distribution of marathon times in the US. It had almost 10 million marathon runners. And it turned out that there are many more people that finish a marathon just under 4 hours than just above 4 hours. Now it's not easier to finish a marathon in less than 4 hours than in more than 4 hours. But you know, it's the effect of my son waving his hand, trying to get to the 100 or 1000, whatever steps. It's like, if you can run a marathon under 4 hours, you feel really good about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it means you had to squeak out an 8-minute mile right at the end when you're really tired, just to make it under.
It's like the target is a pull, but I mean you're not going to become a marathon runner in order to achieve that specific target. That target is like something that happens after you already commit to the goal.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so this is all sort of on setting these goals and whatever. What happens when I'm raising my hand right now because I get very excited by a lot of different things. And even, I mean, I'll even be nicer to myself. People just have a lot of responsibility on their plate. And there's a lot of things that we need to do, you know, in our lives just simultaneously. What happens when we have too many, or is there a such thing as having too many goals? And how do we manage when we have goals in a bunch of different areas of life?
I love this question because according to some philosophers, we all have too many goals. And the reason is that they might argue that if you want more than one thing, you already have too many goals. So Kierkegaard, for example, the person who invented existentialism, is known for saying that the purity of heart is to will one thing. Wow. Okay. This is the idea that you only need to want to pursue one goal. Now, this is Kierkegaard. For the rest of us and for psychologists, we believe that people always have multiple goals. We always want to achieve many things. And so, we talk about pick your battle, right? Like, more realistically, how are you going to navigate the different goals that you have in your life? I personally think that it's actually good that we have many goals. It means that we are flexible, that if something doesn't work, we can focus on something else. It is also healthy in the sense that if something goes wrong in one area in our life, we have the other area. But given that we have too many goals, okay, most of us, most of the time, we need to think about whether we are trying to create a balance or we are hoping to prioritize. Okay, creating a balance means that I need to understand how I can divide my limited resources, limited time between goals, or how I can find these activities that pursue several goals at the same time. We, in the professional motivational science language, we refer to these as multifunctional means. Okay, they are activities that help you achieve several things. Okay, it's I sometimes refer to this as feeding two birds with one scone. Okay, I don't like killing birds. So, but it's it's like biking to work. Okay, so you get the exercise and the commute in the same action, and this is one way to think about how to balance multiple goals. Or when people decide to for some products, buy them in the organic, healthier version, and for other products, go for what is likely cheaper. Okay, and so they are balancing between their health and maybe environmental concerns and their financial goals. Other types of goal conflicts are really a matter of prioritization, and this is the typical self-control conflict. Like there are two things that you want to do, but you really want to do one more than the other. Okay. And I want to express my emotions as soon as I experience them, but I also want to control my anger when it gets to maintaining my relationship with the people in my life. And I actually care about controlling my emotion and not expressing anger in these situations more than I care about the other goal, which is just like go with whatever you feel the moment you feel it. Or no, and maybe a more typical self-control conflict is that I love cookies and cakes and donuts and what else, but I care more about eating healthily, and so I might create some priorities there. And then we talk about self-control and, for example, how thinking about all the decisions that you are going to make in a week or in a month or in a larger time frame helps you see that there is a problem and that you prioritize one goal over the other, okay? That you might decide to prioritize your healthy eating if you think about everything that you're going to eat this month, okay, as opposed to what you might want to eat right now, in the afternoon when you're kind of craving sugar.
Yeah, I that exact example was something that was rattling around in my mind, and it made me think about, and I'm curious about the impact of rewards. So you think about a lot of these decisions and a lot of these larger, more long-term goals that we have, especially health. I mean, it's the easiest one to point out. Like, I would really love to have that candy bar right now because the reward I'm going to get is very immediate and it is lovely. But the long-term achievement of that goal is the ultimate reward that I'm after. Do you have thoughts, and what does the research say about how we can kind of balance that or work with that? Because inevitably we're drawn in by this, the immediacy of, not going to the gym and maybe browsing social media instead, or eating the thing that isn't good for us. It can be harder to focus on what is a very long-term, sometimes intangible reward, or a reward that we've never yet experienced. Maybe you haven't ever been a person who's been in shape, so you don't even know what it feels like, you know, so you can't even really, you know, draw on that.
Yeah, so much that you asked right now. Well, first, you chose the healthy goal, and for a good reason, probably. This is the most popular New Year's resolution in the US. Okay? Most of us want to eat healthier food than what we are eating. Second, you nicely describe the present bias by which we really care about the immediate experience of our actions, often much more than anything that is delayed. And this is very much part of our nature as humans. You know, actually, this is part of our animal nature, even. Like, if something is now, it is much more valuable for me than if it's next month. Like you gave the example of a candy bar. Well, I want a candy right now. If you ask me about next month, I don't care about a candy next month. Right? Like I don't care about sugar that is not coming now. And so the problem with self-control is what we want in the present is different than what we want to happen in the long run. Okay, and so you get like the short term versus long term. Lots of research, lots of strategies that people can use in order to help them do right now what is useful in the long run. But I would refer to one of them, which is finding the food that you like, okay? Relying on intrinsic motivation. Finding the healthy food that you like, finding the exercise that you enjoy, or finding a way to enjoy your exercise. We found that in the US, people often think about healthy food as not tasty. In some of the studies that are actually fresh from our lab, and this is something that I'm doing with Bradley Turnwell, my postdoc at the moment, we see that when we ask people to envision healthy food, okay, like, you know, broccoli or carrots, what they envision is not a dish. Okay, they envision like the raw ingredient. Okay, they envision carrots with dirt on them. Okay, you don't want to eat that.
Oh, that's it's so elemental, right? Yeah. They just like boil it down to the one ingredient. That's interesting.
Right. So like if you just think about healthy food in its like prepared and tasty version, and like these veggies, they can be cooked, they can be broiled, they can be with spices, they can be great. Okay, like fruit, it's like it's colorful, it's pretty, it can be cut, it can be prepared. If you think about eating healthily as a more intrinsically motivated activity, okay, what is the healthy food that will make me happy right now? Then it's easier to put the candy aside in favor of something healthier. But you need to find the healthy food that you like and train yourself to think about healthy food as tasty, as it. Pleasant experience that happens right now as you eat it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And the way that you're describing this, it's, I know there's somebody listening to this who is probably just like, oh, thank gosh, because sometimes when we have these goals that require more of a long-term mindset, we get down on ourselves when I want to eat the candy bar right now, or we give in and we do. I want to talk a little bit. You've brought up the idea of self-control, and this is a space where people get really critical of themselves. I am so weak. There's something wrong with me. Everyone else can do this and I can't. Can you talk a little bit about self-control as a concept and maybe where it starts, where the wheels start to fall off, where there are limits to self-control, and we start to experience, you know, setbacks and make choices that, you know, aren't perfect in exactly what we want to be doing.
Yes. Happy to talk about self-control. Also, you know, when people say that they don't have self-control, well, people say that they just cannot do this. This is often like, you know, when people have setbacks or, you know, a failure experience, often they either don't learn anything or that they learn that it's just impossible for them. Okay. They overgeneralize and they learn that they just should not do this at all. And like, often when we try to get people to learn from setbacks, we say that, well, between not learning anything and learning that this is just a challenge that you will never be able to meet, there is the healthy learning. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And like you just learn what doesn't work for you. Let's think about what does work for you. But putting this aside, self-control, the way we see self-control is involving two challenges. First, you need to see that there is a problem, and then you need to address this problem. Okay, so first you need to understand that single candy that you mentioned will undermine your healthy eating goal, or this is like one time that you lose your temper can undermine your relationship, or like this one glass of alcohol can be a problem. And it's not easy, because in all the three examples that I just gave you, doing it just once actually has not much of an impact, right?
Like,
one candy, come on, April. I'm not going to gain weight from one candy.
Yeah.
And right. And losing my temper once, like that's not going to destroy my relationship. Of course, the problem is that it's not once, right? That otherwise it would not be a self-control dilemma. But the challenge is really to see this like single instance as part of a pattern. Okay. To see that this is not just now. Okay. That this is the kind of decision that I will make every time when I'm in this situation. So I might crave the candy every day after work. It's not just today. What we find is that using what we refer to as broad decision frame, like thinking about several opportunities together, is often the way to go. We found that initially with all kind of unethical actions, like we found that when we asked people, would they take office supply from work for personal use just once, then almost everybody said, oh, yes, sure. And then when we asked them, would you do it 10 times this year? Then they said, probably not. And so just remind yourself that you do it many times is helpful. I'm reminded of Abby Sussman's research on exceptional expenses. And these are the kind of things that we don't buy every day, like champagne or a theater ticket or like a night in a hotel. When she reminded people that they will make this decision many times this year, they were more aware that this could be a temptation. It could undermine their financial goals. Okay, and so you get a better understanding of what is a temptation. Once you identify the temptation, now you need to battle it. That is, you need to resist it. Without getting too much into all the different ways in which people can battle temptations, so like in the way they think about temptations, in actual actions, like, you know, not bringing that food to the house, for example, I would say that what we find is that when people know that a temptation is coming, they are better able to resist it than when it's presented and you're not prepared. Okay. Use the vaccine metaphor, which is not now on everybody's mind. Okay. It's a bit like a vaccine. Okay. Like, you know, I know that it's there. And so I'm prepared. Or no, maybe another metaphor is like preparing to lift a heavy furniture. If I tell you that it's heavy, you're like fully ready to lift it. What we find is if we tell you that in the party there's going to be a lot of alcohol, you will drink less than if you go there, and all of a sudden all the temptations are there.
Yeah. It's that the exact name for it is escaping me, but it's almost like make it that pre-contemplation stage. Like you're making a you're almost like making part of the predetermined decision for yourself because you're not quite in the situation, which I want to go there next. You're not quite in the situation or the context where the thing is. So you can have a little bit more of a frame of mind and be a little bit more thoughtful about what you intend to do to set more of a behavioral intention before you get in there with all the temptation and distraction that happens as life goes on.
Yeah. So there is a bit of pre-commitment and we generally refer to this as a counteractive control, like you're counteracting what you know is coming. You know it's going to be hard. And so you are extra prepared. Okay. You know it's going to be cold outside. You take an extra sweater. You know that there's going to be a lot of food that you don't want to eat in the party. You prepare yourself to be careful when you get there.
Yeah. So much of this that we've been talking about, you know, these behaviors or how we think about our own behavior and our own actions, none of that happens in a vacuum. So I want to talk a little bit about two sides to the unvacuum. Maybe one is something that you mentioned before, this idea of social support. So how other people's support can influence our likelihood of achieving a goal. Why is that so important?
Well, we rarely achieve anything without the support of others, and often it's with others actually helping. So if you think about that, you know, the important goals in your life, okay, it's usually something that you're doing with other people. Okay, you mentioned April, your team in making this podcast. Okay, mm-hmm. I work on my research with my colleagues. We do things as a company. You know, we start a family with another person, and then we have that like the entire family helping us. So often we work with other people, and even if we don't work with other people, what other people think about our goals matter, and the kind of role models that they present to us, what they want for us. There was a reason why so many people want to exercise in a gym facility, within a class, okay, with other people exercising around them. It is just so much easier to get myself to jump when there are 10 people around me that are also jumping.
Yeah.
Like we are as social animals, okay? And I mentioned before, there are things that go back to our human nature, and like our human nature is to work with other people in the mm-hmm. presence of other people, and we care about what other people think a lot. And so let's leverage that for success and find the people that will support our goals. I would say something more than that. We find that relationship is very much a function of how the people with whom you are in a relationship support your goals. So if they are supportive, their relationship is good. If we are no longer instrumental for each other's goals, then often relationships fall apart.
Wow. I've never thought about it that way. That, I mean, there's just a connection that you have. I don't want to say maybe reliance is too strong of a word, or maybe not, but on that other person when they play a role in you achieving your goals. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yes. And some people are strategic about it, even if not necessarily conscious, meaning that like in order to get together with someone or strengthen the relationship that you have, you kind of need to find a role for them in supporting your goals. And you need to find a role mm-hmm. for yourself in supporting their goals, because that's the glue for a relationship. We support each other's motivation system.
How I'm thinking about the flip side of this, you know, it's always amazing. Like people can probably think about that person in their life, whether it's a best friend or a parent or a mentor or a spouse or somebody who is just supportive to the core, that they will cheer you on and be there for you no matter what goal it is that you set, they're going to be in your corner. On the flip side, how detrimental to us is it if we have people who are the opposite, who don't believe in us, who are telling us, I don't think you can do this, and are actively pushing in that opposite direction. Because achieving goals is hard enough. Like the stuff we're talking about is really hard. How detrimental is it if we're going in that other direction?
Terribly so. To the extent that I know, often say, like, you need to find the people that support you, Kate.
Yeah.
Just to cancel out the effect of the negative influence. Sometimes it's impossible, okay? Like if you're part of a family that sets some financial goals and you're trying to save money, well, that's not going to work if you're trying to save money, but your partner is not on board, okay? Because they are spending, right? So you're not doing anything. But even for personal goals, if you set to start a business or start a project and the people around you think that this is a terrible idea, this is really hard. What we observe is that often people just move away and connect to those who support their dreams. And you know, nowadays it's in a way easier because, you know, we can connect to people in like different parts of our virtual world. They don't need to be in the same physical space, but we see that. Let me take higher education as an example. Parents that are supportive of their children's professional pursuits have good relationship with their children. Mm. Parents that think that their child's professional choices are foolish and not something that they would endorse for them, well, you know, they are still parents. It's actually very hard to break up with your parents. Okay, but the relationship is not great. Right? Yeah. And it's just like you are psychologically moving away and eventually connecting to people in your professional network and like the people that you think that your career as a psychologist, for example, is worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to hear your thoughts on that because it's one of those things that we can control. We can think about who in our lives are truly supportive. And sometimes I think people, I feel like it's an artifact of social media that maybe you're on a new weight loss journey. Maybe you're on a new financial journey. Maybe you're starting a new business. We almost feel compelled to have to tell everyone what we're up to. And I just want people to understand, like, you don't owe the world as an entirety an explanation for what you're doing, but you can choose those people who will be more supportive, just truly compassionately supportive of what you're going through, and set yourself up for more success. Like, I want people to hear that, you know, when you have those detractors in your social circle, it's really not going to help you out. So you don't owe people a full explanation of what you're up to. You can select who you bring in.
Absolutely. You don't want to have to constantly explain yourself and justify your goals. It's the opposite of feeling supported. That's the feeling of lack of support. And maybe you hinted at, we'll talk with another problem that could be with that. The person that does something similar to what you do might not be supportive, right? They might be competing with you.
Yeah.
Right? There might be social comparison. And you know, these social comparisons are often a source of unhappiness. Okay? That happy people often avoid that. So when I meet someone who has similar interests and appreciate what you do, they are the people that want you to do well. Okay? They are not the people that are compete with you, that constantly compare themselves to you, and certainly not the people that you suspect will find it less worthy.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I want to, before we wrap up today, I want to talk a little bit about what this means. We've talked a lot about the personal side of our lives, but professionally, you know, there's been so much talk about people's professional lives, just especially in the last 2 years, everything is sort of blended together. Like it's almost, the line was fictitious before COVID, but it's almost gone now. But when we think about goal setting and how all of this applies in a professional setting, if you were talking to leaders or owners and founders of companies about how they can best motivate their employees, what aspects of what we've been talking about or just other aspects of your work do they need to keep in mind when they're thinking about setting up that right environment or support network or whatever it might be to help motivate their employees?
Yeah, that's such a big question because the world is changing as we speak, right? And the main challenges right now with the move toward working from home, either full-time or for some of the time, the main challenges is that we have less of work-life balance, meaning that many people feel that they are expected to work all the time because they are always in the office. Okay? If your bedroom is your office, you are always in the office, kind of.
Yeah.
And the other challenge is that the lack of social support and the right people. Okay, so the people that we have at home might be the people that you care for more than anyone else in the world, but they are not the people that necessarily want you to focus on your work or that be right. successful. Like your kids don't really care if you are successful at work. They want you to be a good parent. And with that, managers, and I talk to many managers, I know I'm in a business school, are really struggling on that. How to make sure that people are connected to the people that will support their work,
yeah.
okay, that is to other colleagues, and how much we should be aware that people do need to spend some time in the office or they do need to have some sort of everyday, maybe online communication so that they know what other are people doing, that they are connecting, that they get the values, that they get the goals of the organization, that it's not just about doing your project, it's more of understanding how we do things here, okay, which is particularly hard for new employees. Okay, when you hire someone from home and they don't come to the office, how are they supposed to understand the culture and what do we stand for here? Okay, and then how do we work with other people? Okay, how much we value teamwork, how much we value getting trained and training others when they're not with other people. So this is something that as we speak these days, management are trying to figure out in terms of balancing the expectations at home and at work. What I found useful is often getting employees to give their advice, okay, to say what works for them, what doesn't work for them, to just gather the information from the field. In some research with Lauren Esquist Winkler and Angela Duckworth, we found that giving advice is often by itself motivating. So even like not only you'll get good information, but the act of asking an employee to give advice to another employee motivates the person who gave the advice.
Wow.
And so yeah, it's a double win. Okay. You'll get useful information, and by collecting the data, you are already doing some intervention.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, nobody wants to be the person who's giving advice and then showing up and not doing a good job. Like you gotta live the part. That's amazing.
Exactly right. Like, you know, you told me to do that. Now, what are you doing?
That's incredible. If there was, you know, as we're wrapping up today, I'm just curious if there was there anything that as you were putting this body of work together that particularly surprised you, that as you were looking at it, you're like, wow, this is really running contrary to what I would have expected. Maybe it wasn't directly in your area of research. Anything that was really surprising to you?
Oh, gosh, many things. I think that in general, not just in writing this paper, in general, in like my career as motivation scientist, I was always amazed by how much and the intrinsic motivation matters more than telling yourself that something is important. Okay, like making something pleasant to pursue on its own, okay, is often the way to go. Don't tell yourself that exercising is important. Find the exercise that you enjoy doing. Don't tell yourself that like eating certain foods is important. Like that, find the preparation that makes them tasty. So it's often like how much self-control is important. But by the time you elicit self-control, you've already failed. Like you already failed the first step of making this sufficiently pleasant and immediately rewarding so that you will not need self-control. And so I'll mention that. Let me also mention that how much you approach goals are better than avoidance goals. I think that was surprising because avoidance goal seems urgent. Okay, if I tell you don't touch
something, yes,
right? Yeah. Don't smoke that. Don't eat that. Like you get that you should immediately quit. But if I tell you what to touch or eat or do, that actually leads to greater stamina. And in the long run, that's better. I tell you, but actually if you tell yourself what to do and not what not to do, you can better stick with it in the long run.
I love that. And those are two really great examples of things that people can start putting into action literally this week. You know, if you think about a goal that you're trying to achieve or something that you've been trying to do, how can you either turn it into an approach goal or make it a little bit more enjoyable? I think sometimes we think we like the real way to get something done is to just tough it out, and you're not really working out if it isn't this miserable experience. And I mean, realistically, we're human beings, and sometimes when we butt up against these things that are just human nature, like we just operate better, you know, if something is more enjoyable. I just think we are the most adorable species because we think we can operate one way, and I'm like, oh, we're so cute. That's just not how we work. So I love it.
Yeah. You know, if we were to describe right now is what we refer to as the empathy gap, right? That you think your future self is just like that person is going to do what's important. Okay. That person is going to be tough and on task, and come on, show some sympathy to or empathy to this person that you're going to be in the future. And like they're going to be tired. Okay. They want to do something that's fun and like pleasant.
They still want the chocolate.
Yeah, right. They want to eat something fun. So find the healthy food that's fun.
That's good. That's good advice. Ayala, where can we find more about you, your work, your book? Where can people get it? It's such good work.
Thank you. You can find me on ayalatfishbeck.com. You can find my book, Get It Done, everywhere, I believe. If you go on my website, there is also a mini course on motivation that I recently created. So you'll see it there. Just ayalatfishbeck.com.
Amazing. I'll make sure that that is linked up in this episode description on the show notes page so that people can just swipe up on their device and click and get access to everything that you just talked about. This is so great. It's always so fun when this is like the intrinsic way of me getting a guest on the show where I'm digging around just because I personally, you know, love psychology and love, you know, learning about domains that I haven't specifically studied before. And it's so fun when I encounter a book and I'm like, I want to talk to her. I bet my audience wants to hear from her. So it's the best way to get a guest on the show because I'm just thrilled to speak with them. So thank you again for accepting this invitation, for hanging out today, and for sharing your book and your body of work and really this massive amount of work you've done to just synthesize the entire body of work. We just appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And it's the unexpected benefits of writing a book that you get to talk to so many people who love thinking about how to get motivated.
Amazing. Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I have a number of things that I want to touch on in just a minute, some additional resources for you, and a fun opportunity that I want to chat about. So hang out for just a second, and I'll be right back with a little bit more. All right, everyone. I am so hoping that you enjoyed that conversation with Ayelet Fishbach as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. She is so knowledgeable about this area of research. I mean, she talked about it, right? She was one of the first, not one of the first, but like some of the first researchers who truly started studying human motivation and achievement. And we got to have her on the show, and that is really exciting. So I hope you really enjoyed that. I have a few resources that I want to highlight, and then I have a quick invitation for you. So first resource that I want to highlight is just Ayelet's website. If you scroll down in this episode description or head over to the show notes page, you can get to her website. I encourage you to go take her course. It is so useful to hear from someone who is as expert as she is on a topic that is as important as motivation is in our lives. Take her up on that and go take her course. Also, check out her book. I found it so insightful and so interesting to read. So her website is linked below. Be sure you check that out. A couple of additional resources. Episode number 325 was an interesting. It was one that was focused on habits and habit change. And I find that the literature in habits is really interesting and has an interesting overlap with the literature in goal setting. A lot of goal achievement involves the creation of new habits. So in episode 325, I talked about how to develop better habits in the year 2022. And we talked about some things that really analogued nicely over onto our conversation with Ayelet today. So things like goals where you are trying to, you know, approach goals where you're trying to do something new versus avoidance goals where you're trying to do or reduce the amount of times that you do something. I give tips for all of those scenarios and more. So if you're interested in a goal that might require the development of a new habit, check out that podcast episode. It's episode 325 linked below. Last thing I want to recommend in terms of resources is a blog post. It's all about red flag words. So red flag words, meaning words that we use just generally when we're talking to others or talking to ourselves that can really change the way that we feel about a particular action. So it can change the level of excitement, for example, that we have about engaging in an action, or it can make that action seem kind of sluggish and not that exciting. And if you think about what we talked about with Ayelet, really, the more excited and intrinsically motivated we can be to achieve something, the more likely it is that we're actually going to achieve it. So go check out that blog post, Red Flag Words. It's linked below. It's just a really great reminder of how the words that we use to describe something really matter. Okay, last thing that I want to talk about is a little invitation for you. If you are a person who is a leader of a team, or if you are an owner or an executive in a company, I want you to listen up. At the end of this conversation with Ayelet, we talked about, you know, how does all this goal setting and all of this stuff, you know, connect to us in a professional setting? How do we motivate employees? How do we get them excited to come to work? And she made such an important point that coincidentally maps onto something new that we have cooking up inside the Peak Mind Center. So Ayelet talked about how difficult it can be to connect an employee to the deeper purpose of a company. So to connect that employee to your reason for being as a company, to your mission, and how critical it is that we continue to do this even when people are virtual and remote. We want to make sure that we are, and she mentioned that this is particularly difficult for new employees and employees who are starting in this hybrid or virtual work environment. How do we onboard employees and get them to connect to the deeper purpose of our company so that there is more of that intrinsic motivation and there is more of that deep connection to the purpose behind why we as a collective are coming together to do this work at this company? One of the things that we have in development and the Peak Mind Center is something that is a very human-centered, life design-focused approach to employee onboarding. There's a ton in life design around getting to know what your values are and what is important to you and if you think about it, connecting those values and what's important to you to your work and to your company can be incredibly impactful. So we're putting together that resource and this program to help companies onboard their newest employees and form that exact connection that Ayala was talking about in our conversation. So here is the ask and here is the invitation. This is something that we have in development, but if this at all sounds like something that your team, your company might benefit from, shoot me an email, april@peakmindpsychology.com. Let me know that this is something you want a little bit more information on. Very soon, we're going to be running beta programs of this, and there's the opportunity to get in at a time when it is still being shaped, meaning you can have impact on it and shape this into something that truly benefits your employees, and also a time to get in when, obviously, because it's in beta, the pricing will be much more reasonable and lower. So we would love to have your partnership as we develop this important resource. We're hearing it more and more from our corporate clients that this is just tough. It's tough, but it's necessary. And it came up in today's conversation, so I just wanted to throw that out there. If you're interested or this sounds at all useful for you, your team, your company, april@peakmindpsychology.com. Hit me up, let me know, and maybe we can partner. All right, friends, thank you so much for joining me this week. I had such a good time with Dr. Fischbach. I had so much fun talking about motivation and self-control and goal setting. I recorded this on a Friday and I'm off to the weekend to go have some fun, but that was a great way to put an exclamation point on my week. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet, and I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.